Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your concerns about the intellectual property rights. That is what my next question is going to address. There was a recent edition of this abuse contact attribute, and I would like to suggest that you consider adding this to counter, say, plagiarism and stealing of intellectual property of those poems, which is really endangering the RIPE WHOIS database in general. Yeah, something along that line. Thank you.
Okay, I think I'll make a note of that and maybe put it on the draft agenda for the next meeting. Okay. I've got one question regarding... Is this actually working? Yeah, if I almost eat it. Okay. With regard to the CRISP stuff, I have read a comment, I think it was in the aftermath of the previous meeting, that the regional registries would not be very happy with the current, I think, requirements document. Could you try to give us some insight on where the regional registries are in this project? Like, has this thing moved away from what the regional registries initially wanted to achieve, or... is the IETF supporting this or detracting from what we want to do? Or?
I don't recall that specifically. I did comment on it before. I think that the way that the IETF likes to work nowadays for new protocols, I believe, I'm not really an IETF person, so this is my understanding, is that they like to put forth their requirements document before they actually design the protocol.
Okay, and who is pushing that from the RIR end?
Actually, all of the RIRs have been involved. George Michelson from APNA, he's the head of engineering down there. He's actually one of the co-chairs of the work group. I see we've got Tim Christensen back from Aaron, so Aaron is also involved, as well as Greg NCC. So I think we've got people are paying attention to this activity. It's not something that we are doing.
Okay, and the other comment or the other question that's more like a question to the community rather than to you personally, that's about automatically or semi-automatically trying to check the validity of email addresses. It's just from what I started to think about is to sort of put funny things into the RFC 822 addresses, which are stored in the database, to make it easy for a human being to find out what the email address is to send to, but to make it difficult for an automated process to harvest that information and to send me whatever garbage they think they want to send to me. So I'm wondering whether anyone else has had that sort of idea, or whether we want to try to deal with that on a different level or on a different plane. Because I'm really fed up with all the crap I'm getting simply because my email address is in changed lines or in other places.
Do you want to answer first? Okay. This time I'm not the lawyer. I'm serious. People have been doing that already. I know at least one colleague who made up a fake TLD like XX and used that at the end of the email address and used some description so that you knew when you knew where he came from, that was his designation, and finally you could reach that person. The changing or mixing, faking, destruction, whatever you say, of email address is a very religious issue in anti-spam community and beyond. My personal view is that sooner or later that doesn't work, because people writing those address harvesting systems are quite smart, unfortunately. There is this race you can't win. You know, these no-spam intermediate labels which you find in Usenet postings and so on and so forth. So what people then did is, okay, the harvesters found out, when there is a no-spam in, I have to delete that and use that address. So what people did then is they registered domain names where the no-spam has to be in, so that anyone deleting the no-spam won't get to the address, because the real address obviously contains that false token. Now, you can play that game for a couple of rounds. The question is, what purpose do those specific email addresses serve anyway? I mean, are you aiming at those in the changed attribute only, or?
Well, that's actually the changed attributes is where most of the nuisance comes for my address. But I cannot really sort of discriminate between people simply stupidly looking at the changed attribute or looking at the personal or contact attribute. It's just a matter of thinking. I haven't done it yet. It's just something I... Okay, so we wait and see how the changes actually impact the situation. Okay, yeah. And the other thing is whether, but that's more an organizational question, whether it's the job sort of the database machinery to make sure that at one point in time the email address was working, and 5 minutes later it's gone, or whether we should try to delegate the responsibility to sanity check those contact data, whatever they are, to the local registries. I don't know.
I don't know. I think we do similar activities, for instance, when you get your reverse delegation information in the database. We do a series of checks to verify the quality of your reverse name server. So I would envision being probably not as sophisticated, because that has hundreds of different checks that it does to actually check the quality of your service. But something along that line, I think, and we could talk about it in the group as well, if we made it a warning, for instance, I think it could only help to prevent typos.
Okay, that's true, yeah. Okay.
On the freshness of mail address data, which is what we're talking about, it's somebody might like to suggest the sort of period for which the refresh period essentially for mail addresses? I have no idea. Certainly, in a slightly different context, other people reckoned that 6 months or a year was good enough. And in talking to our customers, and this is people we have a reasonably close relationship with, I reckon 2 months is more like it. And that means that you have to have two people doing it all day. I appreciate what you're doing about initial insertion of things, but the maintenance is enormous effort, and you have to give it to somebody else.
Okay, any other comments? No? Then I'd suggest you just go on with the second presentation.
other changes. We now have a brief output, and this is a special brief flag minus P, I believe it is, and this will only give you a use context. So the idea here is that if you are writing a script to find the use information, put the minus P flag on, and you don't have to know anything else about the database, it generates these kind of pseudo objects for you, which is just you. We did some changes to the IRT object, and this was to make it more accessible for people to try to address the concerns about it being difficult to use. So the first change is that we have these signature and encryption lines, and these refer to UDP. So either PGP or XML, but it was mandatory, and it actually made it so that people had to know how to use PGP in order to document their IRT. And for people that knew how to use it, may not have really wanted to do it. So we made it optional. Another change is that when you use the minus C flag, this is a special flag to look for objects which have IRT reference. Now it will also return information about those. So just like when you look up an INM object, you get the person, the role, the organization. If it has an IRT object, you can use the minus C flag to do that now. The last one, we say automate IRT object creation. This basically means that you no longer have to wait for the right PDF to look at your request. When the IRT object was first added, there was two kinds of users. One was these trusted, there was a trusted framework where basically you had a trusted introducer and there were a set of policies that you used to become trusted and to make sure that you are being received on basically. So a lot of the initial IRT stuff came from that. We always had the ability for other users to create an IRT object by asking. And we decided that ultimately, in order to make it easier, because at the right SEC, especially from the database point of view, we have really no idea when someone comes to us and they say, I represent an incident response team. Well, you have no way to know that this is true or false. So we didn't feel like it actually added any value for us to be in the way and slow down the process of creating. So that's not correct. There was a separate proposal that actually was just kind of a favorite thing that I always wanted with the database, and so no one objected to it, so it's there. And this is the grouping the objects by relevance. I thought that the way we had grouped the objects in the database was always by type, and this would cause, I think, a lot of unnecessary confusion, because, for instance, if you did a more specific query on your space, you would get a list of all the INM on the top, then a list of all the contacts that were referenced for any of those, and then maybe some role objects too, and then maybe a router two object. And it was possible to go through this list and determine which contacts were associated with which network, but it was not easy to do. And so now the objects are grouped in your output, so it will give you one object at a time to play the objects related to them, and give you a little bit of comment to help you know what's going on there. You can. In both this case and the case of the filtered output where you're taking emails out, in all these cases you can disable the new features with the switch. So if you need the old behavior in a script, or if you just like the old output, or you need to get your original object because you want to update it, in any of these cases you can use switches to get that. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the email, because I wasn't sure if I should mention that. The way it works is that when you get an object based on an IP lookup, we don't do this for other types of lookups, but when we do it for an IP lookup, we check the contacts that are associated with the network. And if there is an abuse mailbox on any of those contacts, then that's the only information that we display by default. So you look up my IP address, you will get the abuse information from our operations department. You won't get my email address, you won't get the administrative contact, you won't get any change lines, you won't get the notified thing. If there is no abuse mailbox listed, then we will fall back to email. The idea there being that, people who only have an email address, that's what they use, that's where you have to go to if there's abuse. That's the only. So before the deployment, we do extensive test we actually have a very sophisticated test suite now with a few hundred tests, like 300, I think. Anyway, we did test it. We did contact script writers. We have a list of who signed AEP with us and things like that. We tried to go out and contact them, let them know that we're going to make some changes. We did a update internally for all of our own internal tools. We've got obviously a lot of scripts. I think we probably have one of the heaviest users of our own tools. The registration services department did a lot of this. We also changed the banner for the office question. After deployment, we did very recently a bulk update to the role objects, and this was to convert the trouble to the robot. And to remarks otherwise. We can see there's a very long URL there. And that's it. So far, so good. We have had some discussion internally, and I talked to actually Joao, who's head of the writing work group, so he can't be here today, and he told me about the last time they tried this. Many, many years ago, they took changed attributes out of the output by default, and that caused a lot of problems because people would just forget to put them back in. Actually, we are seeing similar behavior now where people will do a query to get their object, and they'll send it to the database with whatever new update they need, and it will bounce back to them because, well, they don't have a change attribute, and it's a required attribute. So then they add a change attribute. And the concern here is that, well, people are going to be losing the history of all their changes and things like that. We're thinking about making some changes in the software to warn people when we see that they've stripped out change attributes and things like that, and say, see that you have no change attributes, please be sure to use the correct flag, the minus B flag, or so that's really the only hiccup that I've seen. It seems to be working fine. I don't know if it's actually having the desired effect. I like the shorter output. I like not seeing the change attributes. But, that's it.
Okay, thank you, Shane. Any comments? Yeah. Neil?
Quick question. Did the hint strings make the cut? Did the hint strings in the proposal become implemented? They were strings which looked like RFC 2822 comments, but in fact had a somewhat different formal definition, which went in front of the email addresses, which were included in the proposal that Randy and I wrote. I'm just wondering whether they got in there or not.
No, those were not in the eventual proposal.
Fine, yeah.
But again, it's not impossible to add these things to a later date. So I think the current state is not too bad.
No, let's go with it and see if it does the trick.
Sorry, Dmitry Menzulski, Wimpel Communications. Could it return to page 3? Yeah, about hidden what do you mean, change it, all the records will be hidden. Maybe leave last one, newest one. No?
You can think maybe leave the last one. The idea with hiding the change was to remove these email addresses, which aren't really meant for people to send emails to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why those were removed.
Yeah, thank you.
Over the years, we've had a number of different proposals on how to fix the change attribute, and there was never really anyone determined for them to be changed in any different way, so it's not possible to make things like make the change attribute just have an arbitrary string instead of an email address, or to add a new attribute type which is actually timestamped by the database, or things like that.
Yeah, we also had the idea to allow handles down there. And there were quite a few other ideas here. But I think it's best to actually go ahead with those things and to evaluate them afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Marco, Marco Hoogwoning from Diemen. Couple of things. First thing, I just noticed it, and I don't want to stir up the whole INET6NUM discussion again, is that I make a lot of use of the minus R flag to cut down the number of responses. Since you cut out all role and maintainer objects which are returned, it doesn't include any abused mailbox attribute if you do that. If I feed my IP address to minus R, I get only the INETNUM object, and that doesn't refer to any abused mailbox attribute, because the maintainer and role objects are cut down. That might be a technical reason to add abuse mailbox to INETNUM, but it's a small thing.
Just to follow up on that one, would it make sense to extend the minus C functionality, sort of to not only look for IRT objects, but maybe also look for abuse mailbox objects?
Yeah, but how to handle it? Because if you reference a maintainer or several role objects or person objects which have different abuse mailbox attributes, do you return them all or in what order? The other point you made on basically people taking the stripped output when they're doing updates, in the top of the query you actually get a message like this output has been filtered. Would it be useful to actually add a remarks attribute to the object and say like this has been filtered, so when people cut and paste it in, the update bot can recognize it and actually send a more helpful text?
What is actually the current update interface by way of the web masks? If you So we should probably suggest to the consumers of those strip down answers to, if you want to do an update, please don't use that sort of incomplete answer, but rather go to whatever, either the web interface or use the minus give me everything flag or whatever.
And final one, out of curiosity, any idea of the use at the moment, statistics?
Comment, Ulrich Kirmer, Vienna University, a comment to the minus R flag. The default output of the new system makes sense, is reasonable, and contains all the input. And when you start putting in flags to your WHOIS query, you always have to know what you're doing and need to know what you expect from when you put in the query, what comes out. You can also push minus L, minus M, minus whatever flag, and always get some maybe incomplete, maybe not what you want return on the query, so I don't think this is a good argument for putting the abuse mailbox into the INETNUM and INET6NUM objects.
Okay. Marco, once again?
Yeah, as a comment on that one, you could suggest on putting the INETNUM or INET6NUM add the attribute to it. You could also discuss again changing query behavior. Feed it back if there's abuse mailbox and people use the minus R flag, or even deprecate the minus R flag.
Yeah, the minus R flag was sort of the other way around from the very beginning. Yeah. We changed that also once or twice. And yeah, okay. there is a trail of blood somewhere. Okay, any other comments? No? Then Shane, thanks again. So the next thing is the country attribute. I'd simply like to do a very brief status summary, like where we are with the country attribute. Just a bit of background, you know that all of those INETNUM and INET6NUM objects have to have a country attribute, it's mandatory. But there was never any tight or any precise or concise definition like what the country code in this attribute actually meant, whether it would be the sort of the postal address location of the local registry, whether it was the country where the contacts were residing in, whether it was one of the countries in which the IP addresses were used, and a couple of other things. Neil?
I have a procedural idea which might shortcut the discussion. I know of one person who's particularly interested in this. Maybe in his absence we should put an action item on him to document what semantic payload he wishes this tag to take, and to bring it as a proposal to the mailing list so that we can either bless it or reject it. I think Hank is the only one who has a strong opinion on this.
Very good idea. Anyone else having a strong point of view?
Peter Koch. Well, no strong opinion, but I remember that there was some discussion which didn't really finish on who actually used that, and there was some suspicion that either Google or other service providers would make use of the country code attribute, well, at least as a fallback mechanism. And I guess yesterday I met Rodney, and we found out that when he looked up Google, he ended up with google.nl instead of google.se, what would probably be expected for whatever reason here, or google.com or something. So it might be worth, although I don't know how, to find out or look for signs of different use of this attribute by certain providers of application services. I'm not sure that it's sufficient to contact Google in that case, but things may break. And one of the not so serious suggestions was, well, let's take a very prominent IP range and change the country code to, I don't know what, Tuvalu, and look what happens.
Categorically, MCI, Sweden. I've tried contacting Google, no response.
You know, I have observed similar behavior, like with wireless services in a hotel in the Netherlands, that at that point in time I simply got a Dutch page. So obviously there is some machinery trying to guess, or I don't know what. The basic question for me here is that whether we sort of on purpose, whether we think it's a good idea to on purpose break those heuristics, or whether we should rather take the position of finding out who is using it for what. And if they have a good reason for doing that, then we should help them doing it correctly. That's sort of the two. By the way, while people are going to the phone, is anyone registered on the attendance list? No. So I circulate it once again. Thank you.
This might be a bit a cynical comment, but is it our problem that Google's search algorithms and heuristics break when we change that?
My personal point of view here definitely is no. But I'm not speaking for the working group yet.
Well, apart from the educative effects of that, I would like to have a different opinion. On that one, when a service in quotes it's there, and you at least suspect that someone uses it, and you just break it, that's probably not very good. But given that the location service is based on the country code attribute, don't work out very well anyway. It might be useful, although, I mean, if you don't get any response, if you contact the persons, then who cares anyway. So it might be a good idea to document how not to use the country code attribute, like location services based on country code attribute considered harmful, da-da-da, something like that. So, well, that's a matter of finger pointing. I mean, it's only for documentation after the fact, of course. Like, look, we said that. Don't do it.
Just from the other experience we discussed earlier, how long did we try to document not to use the changed line email addresses in use for any complaint mechanisms at all? No one cares about such a documentation. They do it as long as they get it.
I agree there is no point in trying to educate the uneducatable, but I guess the potential audience for those location services is very different from the audience that is likely to either write spam complaints themselves or produce anti-spam robots, web interfaces, and so on and so forth. So it may be a no-brainer, one-page documents, whatever. Or at least, or only an addition to the database documentation, where if the country code attribute remains in there, which is the question anyway, a sentence might be added if it isn't there anyway, that this is not suited for location services.
Leo, is this on? Yeah, Leo, go to Ripe NCC. I think there's a couple of issues about documentation which people will ignore, but also there's the issue that the country attribute is now mandatory, and my personal belief is that you shouldn't be forcing people to put information in the database that's not absolutely necessary. If it's not really absolutely necessary for people to put the country information in the database, if it doesn't necessarily improve the contact information situation, if it doesn't make the network work better, then I don't think you should force them to do it. Frankly, I'd be happy to get rid of the country attribute, but if people want to put in 5 or 8 or all the countries listed, I don't really care. But I wouldn't want to force someone to put in a country attribute when they don't want it. And I just think you should let it be optional and maybe default it to off, unless someone consciously decides that they definitely want to put it in the database. If they definitely want to put it in the database, then they'll consciously choose what information they want to put in the database, and they might put a little remarks thing in there saying, when I put SE as the country attribute, it means this. It means that I sold this connection in Sweden, or the endpoint is in Sweden, or the people who use it are in Swedish, or they're Swedish people instead of, you know, like living in Luxembourg or whatever. I just think it would be much better to let people choose.
Two remarks to that. First, I fully agree with Leo. Optional would be a good idea, because when the address space is locatable, one could put it in. The other thing is, since we have an organization object now, and usually an organization, company, or whatever, is much easier to pinpoint with respect to a country or a role or something. These are the things that have a location, that have a country, and not the IP addresses. So why not move this information up to there, since we have the machinery now?
Well, actually, we had part of the machinery already, because the local registry identity strings carry the country code, and that's pointing to the country of where the organizational contact is.
But this was not visible in the WHOIS database before.
Not easily, at least. Yeah, okay, I agree. Okay, so the feeling is, I think,
rather than put the chair in the position of declaring what the feeling is and being at risk, I want to put a concrete proposal to the meeting that we go with Leo's idea of making the country tag optional. And let's have a show of hands or something.
Yeah, and optional, and either allow more than one ISO country code in the list or to allow multiple country attributes, I guess. So if someone wants to document that my network is used in Albania, Bulgaria, Moldavia, then they should be able to do that.
Just a quick comment. I believe in most cases the country is a multiple attribute, so you can list multiple countries. And if I recall correctly, we did actually come to this very consensus that the country attribute should be optional a while ago. And at that time, we took it, I believe, to the address policy working group, at which point some people declared that it was absolutely essential to people gathering information about the internet that this attribute be there. So do we expect that we're going to see any different result this time? Are we just going to keep asking the address policy people that can we please get rid of this attribute which we don't feel adds value, or what? I guess my question is, are we going to do something different this time or not?
Well, I would want to try once again following on after Nal's proposal, so that we formally sort of write down the proposal that we want to do that. And if someone has a problem with that, then please come back and document what you intend to do or why you want to have it mandatory.
And now that we have a formal policy generation process, we can use that too.
The first one for me to test drive. Okay. So can we wrap up this country thing? I think.
We need a show
of hands on that. Okay, let's do the show of hands. So who is in favor of making it optional but allowing some sort of multiple entries? Who is against this proposal? Okay, thank you very much. Yeah? Why?
Why not?
I think answering the question mandatory why with why not is a bit too thin. Okay. Okay. But your vote against will be accounted for in the minutes. So we have one vote against. Okay. Last thing on my list here is to point your attention to a document that was originating from the Address Policy Working Group environment. Unfortunately, due to the scheduling of the working group's database is very early in the stream this week, so we can actually not wait for input from other working groups, in that particular case from Address Policy. But I want to make you aware of the existence of a draft document in the RIPE document store, which is available by following the pointers to whatever RIPE draft documents. And the one that's of interest here is RIPE WHOIS registration in 2005, what should be in WHOIS and why. And I think this is a very, very interesting document, and I tried to read it yesterday. And first of all, my question here is, what are we supposed to do with that document, or how is it proposed to evolve? Maybe Leo knows about the plans for the Address Policy Working Group, how to deal with that. I don't know.
Hello, Leo Vigoda of RIPE NCC again. The document was written in response to an action point on Ava to take a presentation she made at RIPE 49 onto the Address Policy Working Group mailing list. So the idea was to take the presentation and put it into something a little bit more structured so that people can go through each of the points and say, for instance, I think there's a real need for this kind of information to be in Whois for this reason, or I don't think that should be in Whois for that reason, and basically to open up a discussion and try and add a little bit of structure to it so that it can hopefully progress smoothly and efficiently.
Okay, so as the database working group, we can take the position to wait for any results coming from address policy, formally, I guess. But on a technical level, I think each of us should read the document and try to make up his or her mind about comments or omissions or additions to that. And I will probably put it again onto the draft agenda for next meeting, unless sort of the address policy working group officially drops it or whatever. Okay? That gets me back to the agenda, and while I was listening to the presentations, I noticed that I skipped one of the interesting administrative items, and that's the minutes and the actions. Let's get back to that. The draft minutes have been put together by Nigel, and they have been available from the website for quite a while. I hope that most of you actually read them. Are there any comments about the correctness of those draft minutes? No, then I propose to move them to the final minutes and to ask Nigel and the webmasters at the RIPE NCC to change the status. I don't think we have to change anything else. And then there is the action list. And I think I made a local copy. Of the where is the thingy? There is the list of actions as they were after the end of the previous meeting. And there is an interesting one on the very top of it, and that's on me. It should be 144 and not 14, but that's a typo. Coordinate with the RIPE NCC to prepare a document summarizing basic assumptions about the use of the database. And this sounds like being somewhere in the vicinity of this Whois 2005 set of topics. So I think I should try to liaise with Hans-Petter and maybe with you, or with address policy, and try to sort of to adjust the task in this action and try to get it done. Then we had this ongoing thing about writing a document to document the use of the IRT object, and I think this is a very good point in time to actually doing that or brushing up the existing documentation, because there have been changes in the implementation, and I'll work with Shane, I guess, to agree on what we want to put into such a document. There is also going to be a meeting of security types in about 1.5 weeks from now, where we might get some feedback about sort of what the documentation should look like and that sort of things. Then there is 48.2 on Shane to publish the CRISP joint Whois requirements on the database working group list. I think this is more or less overtaken by events, because we had the presentation, and whatever is going to come out of that is probably worth a new action or a new, I don't know, Shane? Or Andre?
Andrei Robachevsky, RIPE NCC. Well, I can answer this question. I think the action point, if you look at the minutes, has come from the fact that CRISP and joint Whois were considered somehow competing facilities, and people wanted to know why we need join who is while CRISP is on its way. And it was mainly not so much about requirements, but the rationale behind. Now, we have the requirements for join who is, but they are very specific. They're actually requirements for software development, and I'm not sure that people are actually interested in looking at these requirements. Now, with regards to competing of CRISP and join who is, I think you are right. It was overtaken by events, and CRISP is underway, and I personally don't see any reason to keep this action point.
Okay, so then we take it out of the list of open actions or ongoing actions. Then the change the database behavior to return the IRT object. I think that's also more or less overtaken by events, but rather done, because we have all these changes to deal with abuse and incident response teams. Then to make the PGP or the key certificate attribute optional in the IRT object, as was done. And then we had some new ones from RIPE 49. That was a request to the anti-spam working group to convey the new database abuse contact behavior to the anti-spam tool writing community. I don't know whether we are going to receive any feedback from that working group after the meeting during this week. Rodney, any comment on that? Yes, sure. That's the reason for having the walking microphone.
I wasn't going to take any particular action additional to what RIPE NTC and Shane have already done. They have contacted lots of tool writers, and in particular, they've contacted the ones that, you know, they have good reason to know are using the stuff. If anybody can think of a specific thing that we still ought to do, then I'll do it.
So the action was done, even if it was done in a different context, but that doesn't make any difference. Okay, thank you. So this is done as well. Just out of curiosity, how many script or tool manufacturer sites did you actually identify, or is this just in the range of a handful, or is it 100? Or that's just curiosity.
I can't remember the exact number, but it was hundreds actually that we tried to contact. I think about half of those bounced. So
okay, but it's still more than two or three or four. It's still a considerably big number of... Okay, that's encouraging. Let's see. Then there is 49.2 on the RIPE NTC to give updates about the number of abuse records in the database to the working group. I don't know whether this is still useful or to have it on the list, because we are going to see quite a bit of change over the next couple of months, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know how useful it is either. We can certainly pull that information out and send a couple emails. I don't know how people want that reported or how they want to follow the adoption of this, so.
Well, if it's easy to do, if it's just a quarter of an hour's work, then just for formal reasons, it might be good to simply complete the action and be done with it. Okay? Then to produce a document detailing the program for introducing the abuse contact changes, I think that's overtaken by events because it's implemented. So this is not done, I guess, but no longer relevant. Or do you see any? No? Okay. And to implement the abuse email attribute in the IRT person and role objects. And again, we have seen the presentation, like what has been implemented. So I propose to take that out again. Are there any new actions? I don't know. Does the scribe have some sort of overview whether we ended up with new actions from this meeting? I remember the one, the proposition for the country. Yeah, country attribute. And that's about it. Okay. Then the last thing here is... Go away. Last thing here is any other business? Does anyone have something to add or to contribute or to suggest for the next meeting? because it's really helpful to know that something might come up, might be relevant by September. No? Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for being here. Please return the participants list over there. Thank you. And have a nice rest of the meeting and a useful working group stream. Thank you.
One, two, three, four, one. One, two, three, four, one, one. One, two, three, four. One, two, one, two. One, two, one, two.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Streamt hij nog wel? streamt volgens mij ook niet op dit moment. Ik kan hem ook aanzetten. Kun je hem dat goed luisteren?
One, two, three, four, five, six. Two, three, four, five, six. Three, four, five, six. One, two, one, two. We do ask that we get sometimes we can put on like big stages opposite side if you like to infer. Is this the meeting laptop?
This is the meeting laptop.
And this is...
You already had a plan to your presentation? The presentations are here.
Okay.
Quite a few of them, so...
It's going to be fun for people to find.
You can see yours?
Well, I've got two because I've got them as the main agenda. But I chair the working group, but so I need to know.
You don't have a presentation of yourself?
Yes, I do. But yeah, no, but we have like 15 presentations happening, one every 2 minutes. So it's how do we make sure that they can find them all easily?
Whoops.
No, if one of the presenters is having their own laptop, we can...
We're told them not, that they're not getting that.
Okay.
Okay, otherwise it's like, we just don't have time, unfortunately. So. There's PowerPoint is here.
Toolbar up there and see if I can close it.
Do you know whose this is? That's all chairs here. So if you move the end one, then you have the center. Does that work? Do you want to move one down because Vesna's doing minutes? So she sits there and just goes.
I have one with one side and one with four sides. One side is
I've no idea how you get it, because it does Windows, and I don't do Windows. There was a Czech chap here a minute ago who said he would be back, so.
No, I should be fine. Let's see. Yeah, definitely.
Hopefully, anybody who's got anything important to say in their presentation will have the same comments on the slide. So you should, people should be able to refer to the slides.
Yeah, you mean then I don't have to write the numbers and say they say we have bigger something or the other, then
yes, I mean we don't need a list. I mean it's really more events.
Yeah. And questions and answers. So if there is a discussion,
yes,
that's our
yes.
Minute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are we being audio broadcast?
Probably.
I thought everything was being audio broadcast.
Yeah, and the big room video, too.